Good morning. Looks like our numbers filled out a little bit after all. Well, I have a question for you today. It's kind of a serious question. Are you a hater? Are we hateful people? You know, some would say that we are haters. I found it heartbreaking to watch the success of anti-Christian activists that they've had in the last few years. They've taken apart people's ability to understand even some of the most basic ideas of Christianity, and in some cases remove the ability to even talk about them. And one of the prime weapons that I've seen some secular activists lately use has been the word hate and even hate speech. And I think that you know what I mean with this, that, you know, if you submit to God's definition of marriage and you don't believe people have the right to change the meaning of it, then you must hate those people. If you feel there is a true and right religion, then you hate people of other religions. And even news reporters, I'll hear casually slur people, and they'll call them homophobic or Islamophobic for criticizing those movements. And those are terms which imply an irrational fear or a mental disorder is behind them. Now, one thing that I really want to make a point to say is that I don't want to minimize the real problem of hatred that we see all around us, that we see in America. And there are lots of people who believe that, for instance, white people are just a cut above black people, or that men are smarter than women, or even that gay people as a whole are destroying everything. And those are real types of hatred, and they do have real and harmful consequences. So that can't be minimized. But there's a battle going on against God, and what we've seen is this concept of hate has been enlisted and has been weaponized as a concept in that battle. In fact, there's a whole backstory, and the word that people like to use now is narrative. There's a whole alternate narrative that has been crafted and cast really as a retelling of the civil rights movement. And the idea is that people who practice homosexuality, for instance, are simply victims of prejudice, and that people who claim to follow God are only using their religion as a cover to make their hatred of gay people seem legitimate. And that's a story that does resonate with a lot of people. And I'll tell you why. It works because for now we've had two generations that have been educated in a postmodern way of thinking. And people my age and a little bit older have been taught to define God based on how we feel and how we believe. So it's outside our thinking. It's outside our thinking that anyone would do the opposite and try to pattern their lives after an unchanging God. It's just not the way that people think. So it stands to reason to them that if you don't condone gay marriage, it must be because you hate gay people. And that's the only possible explanation. Because if you didn't hate gay people, you would simply do like everybody else does and change your God's attributes to make him more accepting. So, are we haters? What does the Bible say about hating people? And there's lots of places we could go for perspective on that. One place we could start is that God lists hatred as one of the works of the flesh in Galatians 5:19. I've got a bunch of scriptures today, and they're all short. So you can write them down as I go, and I'm going to read them before you can probably get there. But Galatians 5:19, he talks about hatred as a work of the flesh, and he contrasts it with love, which is a fruit of the Spirit. And the word that he uses for hatred there is a Greek word, Strong's number 2189. Strong's number 2189. I would try to pronounce it for you, but it uses a part of the back of the throat that I don't think I have. So I'm not going to try it. I can spell it out. It's E-C-H-T-H-R-A. God conveys this message through the Bible over and over, that his way of love is the way we should go and not to hate our neighbor. But let's also look at a couple other places that this Greek word that I just mentioned comes up. One is James 4:4, adulterers and adulteresses. Do you not know that that friendship with the world is enmity with God? That word enmity is that word that's translated hatred. So whoever therefore wants to be a friend of the world makes himself an enemy of God. Now, why would that be? What's wrong with friendship with the world? Let's look at another place where that the same word again is used, in Romans 8:7. Romans 8:7, where Paul wrote, "Because the carnal mind is enmity against God," and here's the answer to our question, "because the carnal mind is enmity against God, for it is not subject to the law of God, nor indeed can it be." And this is why people really see followers of God as haters. There is an enmity between a mind that is not subject to the law of God and one that freely subjects itself to the law of God. So does loving God's law mean that we hate people? No, it doesn't mean that. It does mean, though, that some people will hate us and believe that we hate them because we subject ourselves to a law that does not affirm them in what they do. Now, you may have noticed a sea change in the last few years. I sure have. That the liberal concepts of tolerance and multiculturalism, those are actually going away. They're actually dying. Not long ago, most people in our country, at least, they identified with Christian values, and they believe there is a right way to live, and many believe that God can ask us to live that way. So over a period of time, starting perhaps in the 80s, I believe, was when it really started in schools, that multiculturalism was used to teach two generations now that every way to live is the same and there is no moral authority. And that's the way many younger people believe today. Now, multiculturalism is outliving its usefulness, and we're seeing that in a lot of quarters. They no longer need it. In fact, it's starting to get in the way because it demands that Christianity be allowed to keep the same equal voice in society with all the others. And to the degree that people are exposed to the truths of the Bible, that shines a light on the things that people do. We've enjoyed a unique situation in America, where the First Amendment of the Constitution guaranteed free speech and freedom of religion. And it seemed like through a lot of my life, conservatives liked the freedom of religion and liberals liked the freedom of speech. And now it seems like something funny is happening. The people that I used to call liberals have started going soft on this traditional liberal idea of free speech. They no longer support it the way they once did. They're quiet about it. Instead, hate speech is the new tool being used to do an end run around this now troublesome concept of free speech. The University of Chicago, just a few weeks ago, caused a big stir. They sent a letter to their new students coming in, and I'll read you a few parts of it. They said, "We do not support so-called trigger warnings. We do not cancel invited speakers because their topics might prove controversial. And we do not condone the creation of intellectual safe spaces where individuals can retreat from ideas and perspectives at odds with their own. Rigorous but civilized debate may challenge you and even cause you discomfort." That's a very traditionally liberal idea. Before at least the 1980s, that would be something that would be embraced by just about every higher education institution. But they've come under attack for this, and they've been considered backwards and controversial now for taking that stand. I think a former University of Chicago president, Hannah Gray, summed up the problem well when she said, "Education should not be intended to make people comfortable. It is meant to make them think." In John 7:7, Jesus Christ said, "The world cannot hate you, but it hates me because I testify of it that its works are evil." You know, I think it's funny that people like to throw around the word bigot quite a bit and bigotry, but I don't think anybody ever goes and looks it up. Because if you look up the word bigot, the Oxford English Dictionary defines it as a person who is intolerant towards those holding different opinions. Where do we see a lot of that happening today? There certainly is a rise of bigotry on all sides today, I would say. So, and here's the real meat of what I wanted to talk about today. How should we respond to being called haters? And I've got 2 points. The first is that we need to please God rather than man. We need to please God rather than man. We're going through a transition right now, a transition where our reputation as Christians is transforming from a place of honor in society, and it's going to one where we are going to be considered detestable. In a society that calls good evil and evil good, that's what happens. And in a sense, we should understand that we're just reverting to the mean. We're going back to the way things normally are in the world. Right now, and in most of my lifetime, it's possible to be a Christian and please God and please people. But that's not the experience through most of history. It's not the experience of the first century church, or for Sabbatarians in the 15th century, or for Christians in prophecy that we see in the last days. Christians won't be able to do both. So I think we will be tested in that regard. We'll have to choose, who do we want to please? Do we want to please God, or do we want to please people? And our principles will be tested against our need for others' approval. So the question for us then is, are we willing to be numbered among the transgressors as Jesus Christ was for what he said and what he did? We need to please God rather than man. And the other response that we need to have is, we must love in the face of hate. We must love in the face of hate. You've heard the expression, hate the sin and love the sinner. And, you know, that expression rings hollow for a lot of people. It does ring hollow. It sounds glib. And many people don't believe that you truly can hate the sin but love the sinner. So it's important for us, it's incumbent upon us, to make sure that that actually is true, that that's actually true for us, that we back up our words with our actions when we say love the sinner. We have to make sure that we treat all people fairly, and we have to make sure that we aren't being hypocritical with sin by showing favoritism for some people who sin differently than the way other people sin, if that makes sense. If someone who, for instance, experiences same-sex attraction, if someone like that is called into the church, we need to make sure that we treat them with the same love and empathy as someone who's struggling to come out of the same sins that we've personally dealt with. It's important that we actually do that, that the rubber meets the road for us there. To love in the face of hate also means that we don't choose to embrace a villain role. You know, people can have a tendency to start living up to the names that they are called. When people are labeled, they sometimes start to accept that label. When a kid is called stupid over and over, they start to believe it eventually. When someone's called a troublemaker their whole lives, you may see them act out in a troublesome way. I see online people who are called racists respond by actually becoming racist or more racist a lot of the time. So when we're called hateful, we must learn to be at peace with being called hateful, but should never start to embrace it, never start to identify with that in any way. So to conclude, am I a hater? Should I be a hater? No and yes. We should never hate someone who is made in the image of God and ultimately has the same opportunity we do to be part of God's family. But when I see a sin in myself, I hate what it does to me. And when I see sins in other people, I hate what it does to them. There's a case in which people are quite right to say that we are haters. In fact, it is a kind of hater that we should be. In Luke 14:26, that's another scripture you're well familiar with, Christ said, If anyone comes to me and does not hate his father and mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters, yes, and his own life also, he cannot be my disciple. Now we understand, it's been talked about many times before, when it says, does not hate his father and mother, and the rest of this list, that idea of hate is not the way that we talk about today, that in this sense it's saying that love less, thank you, that he who does not love less his father and mother cannot be my disciple. He who does not love less his own life cannot be my disciple. As we enter the fall holiday season, let's also remember that we need to have a millennial perspective. We have an advantage over those who call us haters in that we can look at things over a longer time scale. We know that we will serve God as priests, and we will serve God by serving others. And we know that as God first loved us, so we must first love others before they love us in return. That's what Jesus Christ did, and we need to go and do likewise. 1 Peter 2:12 says, this is another one you're very familiar with, having your conduct honorable among the Gentiles, that when they speak against you as evildoers, they may, by your good works, which they observe, glorify God in the day of visitation. Let's show people love in the face of hate. Let's show people honorable conduct in the face of bigotry. And let's not be ashamed of Jesus Christ. Let's not be afraid to be numbered among the transgressors as he was. We can do this without growing cold and without growing bitter if we love God more and love all else, even our own life, if we love it less.